We are less than 24 hours away from the opening tee at Augusta National. It is Masters Week. There's Dave Festchuk right in the middle. And Dave, you look fine. You look okay in your jacket and your nice shirt, but you can't keep up with the boys today. Look at O and look at myself. There it is, Greg Norman, 96. Look at that. Oh, I like it. You're bringing something to the party there, Dave. But we've got our hoodies on. We've been talking about this for a long time, O, and you came through, buddy. These are outstanding.
These celebrate the greatest collapse in major history, a.k.a. Hazy, the Great White
Shart.
That's right.
Absolutely.
And this was a critical moment where I think he missed a putt or something. He just collapses onto the ground and says, that's it.
There he is. Yeah, it's a shame. Yeah. It's a shame because Greg Norman, I mean, he was such a great player, but that's all I remember. I mean, he's got a clothing line, and I guess he's still in shape, like anyone cares about that. He's basically Gary Player. He's Jerry Player, only a little bit younger, proving how in shape he is, running down the beach with no shirt on. And but he was a great player.
He ran down the beach all right. He ran down the beach all
right. He made sure that one image went viral. That was courtesy of Greg Norman and his social media team, I can guarantee you. But that's what we remember, Dave. Do you have any fond memories of Greg Norman, or is that about it for you too?
Well, I mean, look, I mean, not as fond as Nick Faldo's. I mean, Greg Norman pulls off the Great White Shart, and Sir Nick walks into a knighthood. How about that?
I never thought I'd hear you say that, Festchuk. I never thought I'd hear you say that.
That's journalism in 2021, man.
That's right.
We love it. We love it. Yeah,
gotta
you're right.
Got to stay hip. Got to stay with the times.
That put Faldo in a position. I mean, he was probably already going to the Golf Hall of Fame. He had already won back-to-back Masters, but that brought him to a completely different level. And, like, Faldo's a top 20 player all time, right? Maybe in top 15. Like, when you look at his resume and how much he won, and he'll be down there this week. He'll be doing his thing on CBS, and
Dave,
it's going to be a fun week.
We talk about Faldo all the time, Dave. What do you think of – and I know he's got the British accent, and he's obviously played the game at a high level, won majors – but what is your overall assessment of his commentary? It seems like he shies away from the Johnny Miller type comment where it's like, you choked there, but Faldo comes up with things like, oh my goodness.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, like that was Jordan Spieth puking away the tournament on 12, literally choking his guts out, and he came up with, oh my goodness.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm a big Johnny Miller guy. I believe... You know, something's missing when you don't have that real gutsy truth teller on a golf broadcast, because you're not going to find many of them, and I think you need one. But and Johnny was that guy for how many years, and he's no longer there. And I think, you know, Nick's days are numbered. Like, Nick's days are numbered in that booth, in my opinion. I mean, Phil Mickelson's coming, right? Phil Mickelson will be the highest paid truth teller in golf in very short order. Here
gonna,
we're watching
he's
his career
tee it
finish.
Up for 10 more years. He's going to tee it for 10
no,
more
I
years.
Don't think so.
No, I don't know so. About Mickelson. I mean, I hear what you're saying. He is the guy that if he put his name on the table and said, I'm willing to step into the booth and do it. Like, let's not forget, Faldo puts in work. Like, yeah, he's at the Masters, but he's also at, like, the 3M Open. You know, like this guy.
On Thursday,
absolutely. He's in Minneapolis sitting down with, you know, people doing updates on what Will Zalatoris is going to do this weekend. Like, it's not necessarily just show up for the big tournaments, make a bunch of cash. He does grind, and he works with the Golf Channel. He does stuff with CBS. You'll see him on ESPN this weekend. He's a freelancer, but ultimately you think of him as the main guy in the booth with Nance. I don't know if Mickelson's willing to do that. I don't know if he's going to be willing to grind. And I'm with O. Like, you listen to Mickelson this week, he still thinks he's pretty close. Like, pretty close. I don't think he's going to make the cut this weekend. I think his game has completely fallen off. And you just watch him in recent tournaments where I haven't seen him play every single shot, but there have been a couple of instances where you're like, this is getting really ugly for Phil. Like, really ugly for Phil. And he's 50 now, but he's got so much money in the bank. He's still going to be an endorsement, you know, deer for a long time. He's going to make cash doing endorsement deals forever. He loves to gamble on the course. I don't know. Is he going to sit in the booth and deal with Nance and talk about different
guys,
players? I don't know. I don't know if he will.
Guys, they just – what did they just pay Tony Romo to do 17 weeks of football a year?
Football's
17 Sundays. They're paying him more than $1 million a Sunday, right? It's like a, whatever it is. It's a ridiculous deal. I forget the number. You know, Phil's going to make some of that money. Like, none of these guys can turn down that money. Like, when they're going to throw the premium broadcast coin at you, you don't turn that down because you can write your own schedule, right? You can write, I'm just doing the majors. I'm only doing these tournaments. I'm doing, you know, depending on who you broadcast for, they've only got a certain number of tournaments.
And the other element, Dave, is ego. Like, I can tell you, and I'm not trying to pump my own tires or whatever, but I was a pro athlete in the bright lights. You skate out there, you score a big goal on Saturday night. As a secondary job, Phil's got a big ego, and to stay relevant, he would love nothing better to possibly be the guy that's the voice on Sundays of golf, and that could provide him with the same type of attention that he gets right now. I don't know. I found it as a secondary job where I'm like, what could be kind of close to the pressure of performing and being in front of a audience or whatever? And it's similar, man.
He'd be phenomenal at it. He'd be phenomenal.
That's the thing.
He's a storyteller.
He's great at it.
He is great at it, and he's been there, and he's, like, you talk about a man of authority, which Faldo is as well. Like, Faldo's one of the great players of all time. When he talks about a shot, you know that he's hit it before, and Mickelson will be able to bring that as well. It's not like it's some guy, you know, off a mini tour somewhere who's in the booth on Sunday, but he's a storyteller. He's a pretty big personality. He has become more and more likable later in his career, which I'm not sure that has to matter so much, but it might. It's just a matter of the grind. You know, like, again, I point to Faldo. This guy, he's at the Travelers. Then he's at the Rocket Mortgage. Then he's at the 3M. And that, you know, like, he's – does Phil have the ability just to show up for majors? He might. Like,
well, that's a secondary thing about the job, Hayes. Like, if you know, if somebody said, oh, you're going to do this, and I didn't really watch and I didn't really pay attention to NHL or anything like that, and you just show up and think because you played in the NHL you can do the job – you can't. You look like an idiot.
No.
You get exposed, and you ultimately get fired. You have to put in work.
Yep.
You don't just know every player in the NHL from guessing or figuring out where he got drafted. You got to watch and pay attention, man. That's how the only way I think you can get good at the job.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah, but Phil's just naturally good at this stuff. Like, you hear him hold court in the media room at the Masters.
You know, he loves it.
He loves it, and he's also, guys, he's not just any golfer, right? Like, how many guys that he was kind of a peer to could do the job we're talking about? Like, Tiger couldn't, right? Tiger's got nothing to say about anything.
No.
You know, so you don't want to listen to Tiger talk because, you know, Tiger just isn't a great talker. You know, Vijay Singh, you know, he's got nothing to say. All those guys that played in that era that were really good players in the Tiger era, Phil's the only one that can really hold court and tell stories. And to the point you made about Johnny Miller, he might not be quite as caustic as Johnny, but I think he'd be closer to that. Like, he'd take
Freddie
shots
Couples
at people. He's
got
an
agenda. Something to say too. Freddie Couples has always got something to say too. But I don't know if he could ever be that guy that's being, like, critiquing. I think Phil would have the jam to at least say, man, that was a choke job. That was a horrible shot.
Yes. Well, that's ultimately what it comes down to. I think the reason Couples probably never got into – Couples and Nance are best friends. They were college roommates. I think
that's
Freddie
true.
Couples too good of a guy. He probably say, I don't want to do that. I don't want to say, oh, that's a bad shot. You know, like, and that's what it comes down to. The reason Johnny Miller was so good was because he would say what you just pointed out. Like, talking about Phil, when Phil melted, was at the 06 Open at Wingfoot, I think it was. And, you know, Miller was all over him prior to that. Colin Montgomery on 18. It's great video. Monty, you talk about a guy who pulled a Greg Norman all the time for his career at majors. Monty was – he was bigger than the Great White Shark. He was the Moby Dick of sharks. He was as big as he gets. And this guy melted down on 18, and Miller is carving him, like, destroying this guy.
It was like, okay, Phil, hit a 4-iron off the tee,
and he just
couldn't stop.
He couldn't stop.
He had to pull out the driver, man.
Yep. But I think what Mickelson would be good at is I think he'd be self-deprecating, which is, I think, could help him here, where he'd say, this is where I'd probably get in trouble. I'd probably do this, and it'd be a bonehead move, and that's why I lost the 0-3 Open or whatever, because I did this. He's played all the courses. You know, that's another thing. Like Faldo, there's sometimes new rotations, and Faldo may have played it probably as a guy just kicking around playing it, but maybe not the same level of courses or style of courses that we see today. And the technology has changed. Like that's another thing with Faldo. Yeah. Faldo was hitting like, you know, top flights and
Persimmon Woods.
Yeah, and hitting the ball 245 off the tee. Like it's a different world now, and Phil's been a part of it. So it's going to be an awesome weekend. It starts tomorrow. You can watch it all weekend on TSN and CTV. There's some Canadian content. Oh, you and I, we're going to have our Masters draft a little bit later on. And Steve Sands will join us in about 15 minutes. And we got Graham Dillette from Augusta National as well. So we got a lot on the Masters today. The Leafs are back in action tonight with the Habs in town. Carey Price is not here. And really, the story of the day is the goaltending on both sides. Price is not here. And no one ever knows what's going on with Price or what isn't. The Habs are always pretty secretive of that. But they're not alone. Every team in the league is when it comes to their goalie. And the Leafs are, right? Like, there was effectively no update today on Freddie Anderson, where Keefe was posed the question. I guess he did give info that he went back for another analysis or, you know, I guess report. Courtesy
a follow-up.
A follow-up with the doctors or whoever he's seeing. But not much more than that. Like, he was posed a fairly blunt question. Are you concerned at all that Freddie Anderson's season could be in peril? And he said, no, I'm not. So take that for what it's worth. But Campbell's going tonight. And I would assume for the foreseeable future, you're seeing Jack Campbell in net. And luckily for them, he's been so hot, it doesn't necessarily have to matter. You got a big game tonight, and I'm happy with Campbell in the net.
I am too, but where do you go? Campbell clearly needs the rest. Can Hutchison continue to go in the net and get the job done when he's not healthy? That's what you have to do. Are they gonna? I'm not going to say waste, but are they going to expend energy and a pick or whatever on a goaltender at the deadline? You just wonder where their goaltending situation lies. Because apparently Jack Campbell, as impressive as his streak is, and apparently right now he's proven that he is going to be the guy in net, he wins every night. How do you take him out? But what are they going to do when he's not in there? Do you have faith that Hutchison can be a secondary guy? I don't know. That would scare me a little bit.
Well, I think it scares everyone, but you know, we've had this conversation so many times in the last couple of weeks. If you're getting down to your third string goalie, who in the history of the league has felt good about their third string or fourth string goalie? Who? Like, who in the history of the sport has said, I really like our fourth string goalie? Like, I feel good. I think we can go on a run. That's the nature of the sport.
Well, Freddie ultimately determines that, but the thing is with Freddie, he could say, don't worry, I'm going to be back in 10 days. But how long can that last? How much can you trust that? That's the thing.
That's the truth.
He could say, don't worry about picking up a goaltender. I'm going to be back. But how the hell long is he going to be back for? That's the big question.
Yeah, because
we're coming
up on 3 weeks.
I don't know
what
it is these days. They're just all – they make that side lateral move, whether it be the Ottawa goaltenders, the Montreal goaltenders, the Toronto goaltenders. It's like these guys make that move, and they wince, and they're gone. I don't know. I don't know if that's a new thing that just started happening more frequently, but I don't remember this happening so much.
It's five years ago. You're right. It's an epidemic. It's a hip. It's a groin. It's a knee. It's all connected. That whole chain just gets completely rattled by the butterfly jumping up and down, going post to post. But look, it's almost been 3 weeks, right? Almost been 3 weeks since we last saw Freddie Anderson on the ice.
Right.
Now, they may not be concerned because I think I've kind of deduced that they're sort of saying what Hayes is saying. They're saying, like, whether or not Freddie Anderson is going to be healthy for the playoffs, like, we can't control that. We can cross our fingers. We can give him the best treatment in the world. But, you know, we really can't control it. And guess what? If he's not healthy for the playoffs and ready to go, we're screwed. Because nobody we're going to get on the market right now is going to become a go-to starter that can take us through the playoffs in the way Freddie can. Like, it's Freddie or bust. And it's Jack Campbell on a prayer because he's never been able to stay healthy. But it ain't going to be Hutch, and it's probably not going to be anybody you bring in at the deadline.
No, exactly. It's just that's the cold, hard fact. If it gets to a point where Hutchinson or anyone else not named Anderson or Campbell has to play an extensive period of time, you're done. It's over.
Yeah.
Just like in Winnipeg, just like in Colorado, just like in Vegas, just like in Washington. Like, this has been the case for 100 years in the league. This is not something that has just popped up because Toronto's dealing with it and they got a very good team. So ultimately, you got to hope that Freddie is aware of where he's at, believes in his status, believes he can recover, and you got to make sure you protect Jack Campbell ultimately. Like Campbell now becomes, I believe, an option for load management. And I think they've been doing that anyway, but it gets to a point where if you clearly are not going to play him anything close to, you know, he's not playing back-to-back, so that's not going to happen anyway. But even if you play 3 games in 5 nights, I might only play him once. And especially if you continue with the buffer. Like, the Leafs are in a good spot here. Like, they're clearly making the playoffs, clearly. Mm-hmm. And obviously it is in your best interest to have that top seed, not only for the first 2 rounds, but you're fighting for that top seed if and when you get to a conference final, a cup final. Home ice will be determined on that. And there's a lot at stake. There's a lot at stake. But we'll see. We'll see starting tonight. Jake Allen will go. Jack Campbell will go. You got Leafs Habs. You got a bunch of Leafs Habs games down the stretch here. And they've been really fun games throughout the year. You know, both teams battle each other pretty well. I think they match up pretty well in terms of different styles of game. And this could very well be a precursor of what we see come the first round of the playoffs. And I've been beating that drum for weeks. You cannot give me a bad combination here. If it's Toronto-Montreal, Toronto-Winnipeg, Toronto-Edmonton, the headlines write themselves. Like it's a Hollywood option all around, and I can't wait for it. And now it's just about health and making sure you're crossing your T's and dotting your I's. You know, make sure you got everything covered.
A lot of people have been asking, Hayes, which matchup do you want to see the most? You could say Toronto-Winnipeg would be great, Toronto-Edmonton, McDavid-Matthews. I would love nothing more than to see Toronto-Montreal in a playoff series. First round, I don't care if it's first round or not. Give me that matchup. I want to see it.
Yeah, I would pick Edmonton 1 just because this may be
even the first round?
Yeah, just because it might be the only time you ever get that chance is the point. Like once COVID blows over and you go back to East-West, the only time you're going to see them is in the cup final. Knock on wood, either team gets back there anytime soon. Believe me, I'm not turning my nose down at Leafs Habs. I would happily accept it, and I would find it thoroughly entertaining. But there is a chance next year they meet in the first round. The year after that, so on and so forth. This is it for Leafs Edmonton. And the idea of seeing Connor McDavid in particular play against his hometown team in a best of seven, I can't turn down that opportunity. If I could pick one, that would be it. It would be one. I'd go Edmonton 1. Montreal, too, even though what I said applies to Winnipeg as well. I just don't have as much of a connection to them. Winnipeg 3. That'd be my choice.
See, I'd go with O here. Like, to me, you know, the history is one thing. This hasn't been a great rivalry, even though it is the oldest rivalry in hockey, because they haven't played games of consequence. What is it? 1979 was the last time these teams faced each other in the playoffs. Now, maybe this isn't the year in some ways, to your point, Hayes, because you do have that Edmonton option. And you're not going to be able to go to Montreal and be in the midst of that city buzzing. And Toronto won't be buzzing in the same way it would be with the Habs in town for a playoff game for the first time in 42 years. But I still think the Montreal matchup is more fun in some ways because, you know, because Gallagher's such a pest and Price is such an icon. And, you know, that whole thing is just, it's hard for me to go away from an original six, you know, two solitudes, you know, classic hockey matchup like that.
You can't go wrong with either. It's pick option A, option B, even option C. It's going to be awesome. And there's a chance, again, if the Leafs can take care of business in the first round, we might get both of our wishes granted, or all three of us. Maybe they play Habs in the first round, then Edmonton in the second. You couldn't ask for anything better over the course of a month. Steve Sands is live at Augusta National. I saw him sit down this morning with Nicholas, with Floyd, all the legends coming by to hang out with Steve. He's decked out in a beautiful blue suit, Augusta in the background.
God, he looks sharp today, Sandsy.
Sharp for Sandsy, and it just looks beautiful. I was speaking with someone who was connected to Augusta National and said it is in pristine condition, and it's going
to
play tough.
Who the hell are you talking to?
A couple of people, and they just pointed out.
That's my move, man.
You have no idea who I'm talking to.
I know.
You have no idea who I'm talking to.
Okay. But I take it for what it's worth, man. I believe you.
All right. And this gentleman said it is going to be playing a lot different than it did in November. It is going to be tight and nasty and buckle up.
Well, that's what I want to get to with Sandy, because my colleague and my confidant, Freddie Ridley, the chairman of Augusta National, was talking today in his presser. And he said, we don't really want to go to 8,000 yards. But guess what? If these guys chew up this course and are 25 under and ripping sand wedges at the par fives, Frederick Ridley will make those adjustments.
Okay. I like it. I knew he was your boy. I always knew you had history with Fred.
I got Freddie on speed dial.
Yeah, that's a good guy to be connected to. Steve Sands coming up. Graham Dillette later in the afternoon. Spin the Wheel of Misfortune at 5:30. See what we're playing today. And look back on the Raptors lost last night, the Jays, and what they're up to. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, we will head down to Augusta momentarily. Steve Sands from the Golf Channel will join us. Owen and I, we both have our Greg Norman hoodies on, and getting a lot of positive reaction to that, especially on Instagram. I posted something on Instagram. People are so kind in the comments, just carving away. It's just like, I never post anything, and people are like, why don't you post more? I'm like, because literally our whole audience is just going to goof on everything, which is actually somewhat endearing, and I appreciate it. But it's such a good hoodie.
The hoodies represent everything about Overdrive. It's not just about golf, the Masters. It's about Greg Norman walking on the beach, sharding at the Masters, everything. We love everything.
Yeah, it encapsulates the whole show, and that's what we really want.
Wow. I'm just surprised and very happy that you're still broadcasting this week, because I was under the impression, I was feeling, watching the Overdrive Pro Day, I was thinking this was like your professional mic drop. Like you guys were basically saying to the world, we can't do any better than this. This is the Everest of radio.
Right.
There can be no higher heights than a 17-inch vertical defeating a 13-inch vertical. Done. We're finished.
Yeah.
It was tough.
That was Marconi worthy. You're right, Dave. That should have been essentially, the CRTC should have called us up individually and said, you got to stop. You can't be beat. It's never going to happen again. That's the best. The show peaked on Friday. That's essentially what you're telling us, but I don't think we disagree.
Well, I'm just saying, it's going to be tough to top, is what I'm saying. But I think, you know, it's like the touches, like this, the Shart hoodie could do it. I mean, that's what keeps people coming back.
That's what we're trying to bring. We're trying to stay creative. We're trying to just keep it rolling here, man. In Ontario, we're dealing with a lot, as we know. Although I think there's a lot of confusion over what we're actually dealing with today compared to yesterday. But that's a story for a different day. It is Masters Week. We referenced our buddy Steve Sands earlier this morning. He was set up shop. He had his butter blue suit on, sitting down with Nicklaus and Floyd. He looked money and conducting absolutely perfect interviews. Just awesome coverage of the Masters down on the Golf Channel, down at Augusta. And we head there now and catch up with one of our favorites here is Steve Sands. Looked sound money this morning, Steve. What's it like being down there?
Listen, fellas, I knew I was coming on with you after texting back and forth with Mark the last couple of days, and I figured I'd wear my Toronto Maple Leafs blue suit just for you guys.
Yes, we love it, because it was butter this morning. You had a great backdrop.
Looked pretty hot, though. You were kind of creeping back into the sun, Sansy. Was that affecting your work, or were you just in the shade enough?
Was it affecting my work? A chimpanzee can do what I do, man. I'm sitting there talking to Jack Nicklaus, for God's sake.
Right.
No, the sun did not affect my work. That's fantastic. I think we plowed through that grueling interview in the sun. Yeah, we'll be all right.
No, the only reason I asked you is because sometimes if I get hot like that, I just start melting and I can't stop sweating, and it really affects what I'm doing. That's why I asked the question.
Oh, I was sweating. I get that. But it was when the sun gets above the trees at about 10 o'clock to about 10:45, that sun is roasting on the back of your suit and your neck and your hair and your head, and you are sopping wet by the time it's 11 a.m. And it's so funny. And then at 11 a.m., the sun goes farther, and you can't see it anymore, and it's not on you. But, man, for that hour, it's awfully warm. But I hope it doesn't affect the work, for God's sake. You got to suck it up a little bit.
No, it was great. It was great. And you sitting down with Nicklaus, I had a moment when you asked him about why he wore his glove all the time, never took it off, including when he was putting. And his reaction was so basic and from a different time, different generation. He's just like, I never – wanted to take it off, because if I did, it felt like it didn't fit properly. So sometimes I'd wear the same glove all four rounds, sometimes back-to-back tournaments. And when you consider what the technology is like today, the money in the game, how many gloves, like if Nicklaus was at his height today, let's say it's FootJoy, they'd send him 5,000 pairs of gloves for every round if he wanted.
You have his name on the glove. For
right.
It was. When we get Jack every year around 10 a.m. Eastern on Wednesday, the Masters, and we sit there, no commercials, no nothing, just go for 20, 25, 30 minutes. It's fantastic. It's the honor of a lifetime, to be honest. Pick any sport, and Jack Nicklaus has got to be on your Mount Rushmore of North American sports figures.
Right.
I mean, the guy's the greatest champion in the history of the sport. So you can debate the team sports, aside from hockey, if you're a Gretzky person. But you can debate the team sports, Jordan, Gretzky, whoever. So when we get to sit there, and I know that we're going to have him, I am a big believer in you do your homework, and then you go on the air, and you go. And you listen, and if he takes you in a different direction, you want to ask different questions. But you formulate a game plan in your head, and you just go, and you listen to what he says and all those kinds of things. So when I was thinking about it last night, I was like, I've never asked him about his glove. I mean, we've been doing this together for years, and obviously I see him a few times a year, but I've never asked him about that. He's the greatest player in the history of the sport, fellas. Why wouldn't you replicate everything he did?
Right.
Like, why wouldn't you do everything? Did he ever miss a putt? Never. He never missed a putt that meant anything in his life. So it just kind of dawned on me. I figured I'd ask him. We got done, right? And we're just kind of hanging out. He's just kind of sitting there. He's not in a hurry. He's just kind of chilling. He kind of looks. He goes, no one ever wears the glove anymore, do they? And I go, nah, you forget anything. You won. He's not like he's a 45-year-old man anymore. He just kind of sits and goes, no one ever wears the glove anymore, do they? He goes, I wonder why. Yep. I'm like, yeah. And he just sits there. It was cool. He's the best, man. I love it.
Sanzi, watching coverage today, there's the cameras on the range on Bryson and DJ, JT. Is there any kind of buzz around Spieth as opposed to when he was back there in November? I mean, what is that win? Do you think he can kind of get back into a groove and actually contend this weekend, or do you think he might be a ways from that?
Oh, I think he's right there. I think this place brings out the best in him. You can hit it a little bit sideways here and get away with it. Not too sideways. Can't be in the trees and in the pine straw, but your short game and your putting can make up for a lot of shortcomings in this venue and at this place, at this course, under this pressure. He's got a win, two tied for seconds, and a third. All right, that was all in a five-year span. There's four great finishes in a five-year span. He knows how to get it done around here. The confidence he has this week versus his last two trips here to Augusta is immeasurably higher. That win on Sunday at the Valero Texas Open was massive for him, not just because he played well. He had played well for a few weeks. What happened was he played well and he finished. And when you finish, you have a little bit more of a bounce in your step. There's no question there's a buzz around Spieth. He's not the betting favorite right now, but I'd put him right there near the top of the list, absolutely.
So, Steve, when you look back to November, when we last had the Masters in that one-off, Bryson DeChambeau came in with all the hype and all the fanfare, and he kind of had a bit of a meltdown and barely made the cut, finished T34. But it's very different, obviously, in April at Augusta. What do you think Bryson's chances are with the big bomb that he brings and all the rest of it, a pretty good putter as well?
Yeah, listen, the thing that's different between Wingfoot and here, where he won his U.S. Open, is that at Wingfoot, you can overpower a golf course that has that type of rough, because if you hit it a little bit off target, not in the fairway, the rough's going to catch the golf ball. So then you have a 9-iron because of your strength and that muscle that he has, as opposed to the other guys hitting 7-irons out of the rough. And that is an enormous difference at that level when these guys are hitting 9-irons out of the rough as opposed to 7-irons. So, or some of them are even punching out because they just don't want to even attack the rough. So that's how he got it done there with good putting as well. Here, if you're a little off target with those big bomb drives, it's going into that pine straw and those trees I just talked about with Spieth. And I think that I would not put my money on Bryson this week. His tie for 21st in 2016 is his best ever finish in five trips. That's when he was an amateur. Until he decides to not try to overpower this golf course, I would not take Bryson DeChambeau. A great player. He certainly could win, but he's not going to win playing the way he played at Wingfoot.
We're chatting with Steve Sands of the Golf Channel. The Masters beginning tomorrow down at Augusta National. Steve is down there. If everything was equal and this guy was 100% healthy, I'd probably put big bank on Brooks Koepka breaking through at Augusta. The way he's played the last couple of years there, he's right at it. Even in November, he was right there. When Tiger won it, he was right behind him. He was lurking. But I just can't trust it. On that course, how hilly it is.
See the way he's got to lean down to read a putt? He looks like Tony Pena.
He does. he can't read a putt properly. And this is Brooks Koepka proven that he's a tough guy, which I kind of like and appreciate. But I just don't see how it's going to work, Steve.
I love it. He's a hockey player playing golf. I mean, the guy doesn't want to take it off the ice. I totally get that. I think it's great. But I'm with you, man. I mean, first of all, by the way, I love the Tony Pena reference, the little, you know, Cardinals catcher reference.
Oh,
that's fantastic.
Of course.
I think the thing with Brooks is, and you said it, this course is really hilly. It doesn't look as hilly on TV as it is in person. And you could ski down the 10th hole. You hike up 18th. And it's long walks and undulating walks. And, you know, he's a bad stance away from just saying, I'm sorry, I can't hit the shot, you know, that kind of thing. So to me, if he was healthy, 100% I would put my money on Brooks Koepka. But he's not healthy, and I think he's not trying to be a ceremonial golfer this week. I just think he's trying to gut it out, which I find commendable. I just don't think over the course of 4 days and 72 holes that he's going to be able to hold up.
Sansi, Rory commented on being in Tiger's house and recognizing the major championship trophies. What message do you think he was trying to portray to the media? Was that he's trying to focus on majors now, or that's all Tiger cared about? Like, where do you think his headspace is going into this Masters? Because he's a guy that you look at every year and you say, how does this guy not win one of these the way he hits a golf ball?
I know. I'm with you. His headspace is large. It's a large capacity for things inside his head. He's probably the smartest great golfer in the world. He's just a guy you can go talk sports, politics, anything you want with, and he's got something to say. He's got an opinion, and he can articulate it in a fabulous manner. I don't think he was trying to send a message. I think he was answering a question that he was at Tiger's place, went to go see him, checking in on his friend, making sure he's okay. And while he was there, he just happened to be in a room where the major championship trophies were, and not all 15 were there. And Tiger kind of jokingly said, I don't know where half of them are. They're, you know, one of them's in my kid's room, one of them's over this room, one of them's in that room, that kind of thing. So I don't think he was trying to send a message. I think that, you know, look, he hasn't won a major, guys, in 7 years. 7 years. He won four majors from 2011 to 2014. It's been 7 years. This is his seventh attempt at trying to achieve the most difficult thing to do in the sport, which is the career Grand Slam. The only other person to do it here at Augusta is Gene Sarazen. That was in 1935. So, you know, no offense to Gene. I love Gene. Love the Squire. But, you know, I mean, it wasn't the same deal back then. So there's a lot of heat on Rory, a lot of pressure on Rory, and he's a thinker. He's a guy who, he's not soft. He's not one of those guys, but he does think, and sometimes thinkers tend to overthink. And he has certainly overthought things at Augusta more so than the other major championships. Just like the Royal Portrush. Remember a couple years ago when the Open was there? Mm-hmm. He's from Northern Ireland. It was terrible. Everything was on his shoulders, and he tried to carry it, tried to do the right things. Instead of just having the killer instincts and telling it to a killer instinct, just telling everybody to go buzz off, he's trying to be Rory McIlroy. And it backfired big time on him, especially on the first hole. He took himself out of the championship on the first hole, and he's done that here before. So let's see how he plays tomorrow morning. I think it's a big spot for him tomorrow. I think tomorrow's the day you'll know whether he has a chance to win. He's not a come-from-behind kind of golfer. He's a guy who gets out in front and puts his foot down on the pedal. And I think getting off to a good start is more important to Rory, perhaps, than anybody else in the world.
With Steve Sands of the Golf Channel, the Masters beginning tomorrow down at Augusta. Steve is down there. So, you know, we've kind of broken down a lot of the chances of the big boys here. We're talking DJ. We know what he's about. We haven't mentioned Justin Thomas, but clearly based on what he did at the Players, he's one of the three or four guys who I think a lot of money is coming in on, and it should be. And Koepka, we talked about Spieth, Rory. What about that second layer, Steve? If you give us a name or two who's creating buzz, you know, the Schauffeles, the Reeds, the Cantlays, the Hovlands, Morikawa. Yeah, in that secondary range, is there one guy in particular that is creating buzz that you think this is worthy of a circling and keep your eye out?
Patrick Cantlay, if you're going to pick one guy, I think Patrick Cantlay's got a great chance to win, 100%. He was the leader in 2019 when Tiger won on the 14th tee all by himself. He knows how to do it around here. He just hasn't closed. And I think Patrick Cantlay has a breakthrough win coming real soon, and it could be in 4 days. It could be Sunday night here at Augusta. I think there's a guy from Chile. His name is Joaquin Niemann. He's won on the PGA Tour. He's been around for a few years. I think Joaquin's going to play well here this week if you want to go deep off the board. I think that Paul Casey could play well. I think Patrick Reed and Sergio Garcia in that second tier with Patrick Cantlay. I think those two Masters champions from 17 and 18 have an excellent chance to slip on a second green jacket. But if I was going to take one guy off the board, I would take Cantlay, and I would kind of box it with on top of Spieth, on top of Reed and Garcia and Casey and Joaquin Niemann.
Sanzi, one of my obligations on this show is in major championships, I have to watch all of the pressers from everybody. And today, my guy Freddie Ridley addressed the media, and he was commenting about the golf course. And I kind of got a vibe when he was talking about we have the means to buy more real estate. We don't want to go to 8,000 yards. But what I took from it was if these guys want to shred this course and be 25 under, we got to do something about it. What did you make of his comments?
Yeah, I think distance is a massive issue for a number of reasons. One of them is, you know, do you want to start changing the history of the sport? Do you want to, you know, when there's too much offense or too much defense in the NHL, are they going to go to the international rules? Are they going to go to the international crease? Are they going to change the way they play hockey? I mean, you know, you can fiddle around with certain things like the overtime and, you know, shootouts and certain things, but the crux of the sport must remain the same throughout time. And what Fred was trying to say today was, let's keep things in check so that Augusta National isn't 8,500 yards and guys aren't doing things that they've never done before all the way through the history of the sport. Not that you want to keep everything the same, but if you just dial it back a touch as far as how far the golf ball goes, then this place has the means to expand.
What does that mean otherwise, though, Sanzi? Does that mean you go to Augusta National, they're going to hand you a golf ball and you're going to play that one?
No, they don't want to do that because they want to play by Fred Ridley, at the end of the day, won the U.S. Amateur in 75. He's a USGA guy. He was a USGA president. He wants to follow the rules of golf. So what he was trying to say, I think, was we have the means to do whatever we want. No one else does. Glen Abbey is not just going to all of a sudden be a 9,000 yard course. You can't do that. You know, your local muni doesn't have the ability to just expand all the time. That's not how it works. Everything's better now. The agronomy's better. The equipment's better. The golf ball's better. The athleticism in the game is better. People are bigger and stronger. Everybody understands that. But if you can just launch a golf ball to yardages that are beyond belief, well, that's going to make the game obsolete. Not at a place like Augusta. That's what Chairman Ridley was saying. We can do whatever we want here. We want to go to 10,000 yards, we can do that. If we want to play an Augusta ball, we can do that. But we don't want to. We want to play by the rules and be a good partner with the USGA, with the PGA of America, with the RNA, and just kind of do things the way they're supposed to be done. And I think he was just trying to tell them, let's take our foot off the gas just a touch.
Well, we'll see where that takes us. But before that, we're going to have four incredible rounds of golf down there. We can't wait for it. Good luck down there. It's always great to catch up with you, Sanzi. We'll do it again soon. Thank you for this.
All right, fellas, anytime. Go Caps.
Yep, you got it. There's Steve Sands of the Golf Channel on NBC. And live from Augusta, it starts tomorrow. Graham Dillette will join us from Augusta a little bit later in the afternoon. Oh, you and I will have our draft as well. We'll flip a coin and we're going to make five picks and then a Canadian.
Dave, get a coin, Dave. Get a coin for the you got to run the draft here, buddy.
Yep, ceremonial coin flip. Okay, so Feschuk will have that. The Jays have wrapped up their day game in Texas and they have lost to the Rangers. So that's two losses in a row. All of a sudden, their bats went cold. Rhea went into the seventh, though. That's all that really matters is an arm going into the seventh inning. That's what we really care about. Mats did it a couple of days
ago. Let's take a break and talk about the guy that took the mound last night.
Yeah, Tanner Roark. We'll get into that. And big news in terms of the GM and his security here in Toronto. We'll tell you more about that as well. Dave Feshchuk in here from the Star. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, Ray Ferraro will join us in about 15 minutes. We will spin the wheel of misfortune, see what we're playing at 5:30, see who we hear from and what we're going to play at 5:30. The Jays have wrapped up their afternoon game in their series in Texas. They lose 2-1 to the Rangers today. And Ryu pitched well. He went into the seventh, which, again, is significant when you consider what happened last year and what's been happening throughout baseball. It wasn't his issue. The bats just did not come alive. And offensively, they really have not woken up yet. You know, there have been moments. No. There have been flash in the pans, and Vladdy's been good. Grichuk's been very solid. And, you know, Bo hit two bombs last night, but ultimately it didn't matter because they lost. But before we get to today's news and today's game, Tanner Roark last night, he gives up three home runs in three innings. And I'll give him credit for just being, you know, blunt. There's no way of dancing around it. Like, he just came to the podium last night or whatever, the scrum, and said, I gave up three home runs in three innings and got pulled. That can't happen. And
he's a momentum vampire. It's like the reverse of an ace. It's like your ace goes in there to continue streaks and to stop losing streaks.
Like, yeah, he's a two of clubs as opposed to the ace of diamonds.
He's 2-7 offsuit is what he is.
Yeah.
Okay? And it's just the only question is, everybody knows where he's at, or if you have any knowledge of watching anything, it's just how many more chances are going to give him to wheel him out there in the mound? How many more times can you do it?
I don't think you can again. If Robbie Ray comes back off the IL, that's it for me. I don't think you go back to the well. Like, it's very clear they chose Roark simply because Ray got injured, Hatch got injured, Pearson got injured. Those are three guys that went down in front of him, I believe, in the rotation. I'm not sure he makes the team out of camp. Like, I know they spent a lot of money on him. They're paying him a lot of money this year. They gave him a 2-year deal at pretty decent cake. And last year he was a gas can. He blew up for them. His velocity's down. He's got no movement on pitches. He's a pitching machine.
Dude,
last night.
Yeah, like, he's throwing just pizzas in there, man.
Yeah. If you're a competitive team, you can't have him on the mound. You can't.
No.
Yeah. The problem is the velocity is down, but the exit velocity is up, right?
Right.
And you saw some serious rockets off the bat last night. But to give him a little bit of a defense here. The defense was terrible, right? Like, you had some booted balls there. I think Biggio had one he should have had. Bichette had one that should have been a double play and wasn't. And if those plays are made, like, those are the moments. This team has talked about how its defense is going to be better this season. Mm-hmm. Guess when it has to be better? When you got one of your down-the-rotation starters on the mound, right? You got to be better. You got to make those plays. And they didn't last night, and it came back to bite them.
Well, that's absolutely accurate because – They're taking a big gamble. Like, they got Biggio playing out of position. He is not a major league third baseman. You know, he's not. That's not what he's familiar with. It's not what he's been doing since he got to the majors. He's predominantly been playing second base. Yes, he's a utility type guy, but that means more. You could play second or left field, not third base because we have to, because we don't have options. Vladdy's still growing. Bo Bichette, this is a platform year for him. Like, that's what it is defensively, not as a player. Offensively, he's going to have it. He's got the moxie. He's got the leadership. They're granting him this opportunity. He wants it. He wants to play short. But take a look at who's going to be available. Lindor's off the table now, but Trevor Story's going to be out there. Javi could be out there. There's a lot of potential big names who could be available that play short. Like, we're talking the cream of the crop. And I don't know if they'll go back to the well and spend a monster on that position, but they might be forced into it. And it's on Bichette to prove that he can play every day at short. It's early. You know, it's very early into the season. But, you know, even if you have Kirk behind the plate, he's still growing as a guy behind the plate and what he's capable of doing defensively. Biggio at third, Bo at short, Vladdy at first. I mean, that's a lot of raw talent that you're trying to mold into a unit that can help a guy like Tanner Roark when you need it. And, again, I would assume if Ray comes back, it's either Roark out or it's TJ Zoik is coming out. You know, but Zoik, I think, pitched pretty well. Like, I think he showed enough where maybe you keep him in the rotation. But I think ultimately when Pearson comes back, Ray comes back, maybe Hatch, you can't keep going back to Tanner Roark. Like, if you're legitimately interested in winning, and you have better options, I don't care that he's getting paid a lot of money. You have to make an adjustment. It has to happen.
No, because it's not a one-off, right? What was his ERA last year? 6.80
yeah.
in 11 starts last year. So it's not like this is big news that he's not elite, right?
No.
And so you're right. I mean, they're going to have to make a move, and I'm sure they will. I mean, he wouldn't be in this position, to your point, Hayes, if not for some camp injuries and some luck going his way. But then again, you know, you point out, they gave him a pretty hefty paycheck.
$12 million this year, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot of cash.
Like the guy's making more than Austin Matthews. You might expect him to not get lit up every night.
Well, yeah, that would be ideal, but it didn't happen. So the Jays lose 2 of 3 in Texas. And some George Springer injury news, too, not very positive. We'll tell you more about that in the 5 p.m. hour. Ross Atkins has a 5-year extension. He's sticking around as the GM. We'll get into that. Rays coming up. There's a lot still to come. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2.